Since Philadelphia rapper Meek Mill was sent to prison for probation violations, his fans have responded. Supportive billboards have gone up. A bus tour with a free Meek Mill sign has driven around Philadelphia City Hall, and celebrity supporters have spoken out on his behalf. But how does this case provide a window into how thousands of other Philadelphians deal with probation every day? WHYY's Bobby Allen sat down with the city's top public defender, Keir Bradford Gray, to explore this question.
In some ways, Philadelphia rapper Meek Mill going to prison for 2 to 4 years for probation violations is extraordinary, and in other ways, it's not at all extraordinary, right? Before he was sentenced earlier this month, he was one of 45,000 people on probation in Philadelphia. And now, he's sitting in jail for violating probation. He's one of thousands who've been incarcerated for breaking the rules of their probation. In fact, in Philadelphia County, 1/3 of all prisoners behind bars are there for probation or parole violations. Can you talk about how Mill's jail sentence highlights issues around local mass incarceration?
Absolutely. I think what we've seen in the Meek Mill case is someone who can go to jail for a lengthy term for not committing a new crime, but doing things that were, most would deem mistakes that you shouldn't do, but something that's not worthy of a state sentence in prison.
So the outrage that Meek Mill's punishment has sparked has, I think, left a lot of people asking, how did this happen, right? He was originally arrested for gun and drug charges back when he was 19 years old, and he's been under the supervision of the same judge, Janice Brinkley, since then, so for more than 10 years. Critics of long probation sentences say, if you're on probation that long, it's an arrangement that's kind of bound to fail, right? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I do think if people are on probation for 10 years, they are going to make a mistake, as we stated before. 5-10 years of probation is just – it's really not designed to help people progress. And like I said before, once the court supervision ends, people are on their own. So we have to give them a little bit of freedom and flexibility. Even though they're under the court's watch eye, we should be looking out to whether as to whether or not they're in the same position, demonstrating the same antisocial behavior or committing new crimes, not are they perfect. There's no real boundaries in terms of how they can sentence you other than the statutory max of the original charge. And so if he was charged with selling drugs, the statutory max is 10 years. The judge can't sentence him to 11 years, but she can continue to give him 5 years and 5 years and 5 years. And I mean, we have people that are on probation for, decades, and they just can't seem to get from underneath it.
And so your office represents some 10,000 people a year in probation violation hearings, right? Can you walk us through how often someone is sent to prison for violating probation and kind of what those courtroom debates are typically like?
Yeah. So, that's something that we all own in the criminal justice system. And I mean all of us, meaning the defenders, the DA, the judges, as well as the probation officers. When people are in violation, there's not a lot of information about all the progress they've made. And, unfortunately, when people are in violation, we get that information really rapidly, and we have to piece together what has someone done for the entire time they've been on probation, what are some of the pitfalls, what are some of their real life circumstances that would prohibit them from doing everything that they needed to do. And we don't always get that full picture. And so we're trying to do a better job at that by using the community and a initiative called Participatory Defense. So when people are in violation, we'd like to have someone from the community talk a little bit more about who they are and what they've done and what opportunities they may have.
So getting back to Meek Mill, he's signed to Jay-Z's record label, right, Roc Nation. He's amassed a sizable fortune through touring and selling records. His defense team consists of 5 seasoned lawyers who file these time-intensive 70-page motions on his behalf. He has seemingly endless resources and the best legal defense money can buy, right?
Yes.
And some are holding him up as a poster boy for the problems of excessive jail sentences and being micromanaged on probation. In what ways is he really a good example of that, and in what ways is he really not?
Well, in ways that he's a good example is that his case amplifies this problem. So we can talk about it around what happened here and really break it down and say this is not something that's unusual. But in the ways he's not is that he has been treated a lot differently than people that we normally represent on both ends. I mean, I don't see him as the poster child, but I see him as an opportunity to really discuss this problem in a larger, broader sense, in that if we want mass incarceration to end, we have to understand what it looks like. And his case does exemplify that.
So of the people who your office is defending in violation of probation hearings, is it, would you say, typical or not so typical to have prosecutors not ask the judge for jail time and then the judge still go beyond and sentence that person to incarceration? Because that's what happened in this case. And some people were wondering, how often do judges go beyond what prosecutors are asking for?
Well, that can happen. I mean, it doesn't happen, you know, extremely frequency, but it does happen a good bit of the time. I mean, you know, the judge may have a different view of what this person did or didn't do based on what he or she told them, and that may shape their vision as to what they want to do with the person once they didn't comply with all of their orders. You know, it's not the DA that puts the stipulations and conditions on them. It's the courts.
And can you talk a little bit about the latitude that common pleas judges have in Philadelphia in terms of how much prison time that they think is reasonable, right? There's not sort of like a guideline sentence or like there is for some other types of cases in Philadelphia. A judge has wide discretion, right?
Yeah, for probation, a judge does. For an original sentence, there are guidelines that will help guide a judge as to how to sentence. But once they're on probation, it is totally discretionary. There are no guidelines for probation. And that's something that we need to work towards, looking at guidelines and looking at what offense would hold what type of weight. Because then you'll be at the whim of every judge who has a different view of a person or whether or not this person should have complied with their orders.
You know, some people say because there's so much discretion there, that creates a space for judicial abuse or for excessive sentences. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it could cut both ways, right? It could cut a way where a judge believes that a person has had enough, and some people may not like the short sentence a judge may have given a person on probation. But it also gives way for some judicial abuse where a judge could have, you know, some personal biases that are baked in there. And you never know that we're all human. That may seep through in their way that they sentence an individual. I really do think there should be some guidelines with some leeway either way, but leaving the most harsh sentence for the egregious conduct and lighter sentence for as an incentive to do well. I don't think there are enough incentives on probation, and they need to be more.
So can you – because another thing that kind of baffles outsiders is what's the 2 to 4 year sentence? What does that mean? After 2 years, though, he would be eligible for
parole,
right? Can you just describe why it's 2 to 4, which is typical to see that, right?
Yes. In Pennsylvania, we have mandatory – well, we have a minimum and maximum sentencing. And so when you're sentencing a person, the maximum should be twice the minimum. So if you get 2 years minimum, your maximum would be 4 years. So you have that period of time, but which you're still under some supervision once you are released, whether it's parole or probation. You know, for parole, once someone is eligible for parole, he can be eligible, you know, in 2 years or less, depending upon what's going on in the prison. It's good behavior. But once he hits the parole, once he's a street on parole, if there is a violation, he'll go back and do the remainder of the sentence that he did not do in jail.
And it won't be Janice Brinkley making that determination, but the parole board, correct?
Absolutely.
After 2 years.
Yes. Yes.
So what other factors are weighed by the parole board? I mean, obviously your behavior while you're incarcerated, but are there any other factors that go into it? Could there be character testimony and other variables that weigh?
I mean, those could happen. Does it happen often? I don't think it happens very much. Most people don't even know who's on the parole board or where that even would take place. So that due process hearing is generally goes by looking at the violation and looking at the original sentence. That's how those generally go. My office handles parole violations, and they're very quick, and they're really strict. Mostly they want to understand what are the offenses committed.
Mm-hmm. So Mill's lawyers have argued that Janice Brinkley needs to step down from the case. They say that she's been inappropriate by giving him career advice, and I'm sure you've probably read even allegedly asking him to cover a Boys to Men song and asking Meek Mill to give the judge a shout out in the song. You know, she visited a community service site Meek Mill was working at as part of his probation, then scolded him in open court for folding clothes instead of giving out food to the homeless. Is this concerning behavior for a judge, and do you think she's unable to fairly preside over Meek Mill's case?
Well, I really can't answer that, whether or not she's I hadn't been a part of any proceeding, so I could not answer that question. I could just tell you that if the things were true, that would seem kind of odd. It would. And now I don't know what the discussion was in the court, and maybe there were more jovial conversation, or maybe they were just regular, you know, conversing with him. I'm not sure, but it's something that I think if it's true, she's going to have to answer to.
Keir Bradford Gray, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Keir Bradford Gray is the chief defender at the Defender Association of Philadelphia.